So AI governance is a big deal for you, isn't it? Well, if it's not, stick around because we're going to give you some great insights from an expert. And if you are already doing it, compare notes. Hello and welcome to another episode of CISO Tradecraft, the podcast that provides you with the information, knowledge, and wisdom to be a more effective cybersecurity leader. My name is G. Mark Hardy. I'm your host for today, and I'm here with Dave Lewis, who is the Global Advisory CISO from 1Password. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be having a chat with you.
Well, for those who are new to the show, go ahead and follow us. Follow us on LinkedIn. We've also got Substack newsletter. We've got a lot of information out there to help you out in your security journey. So that's my little ad in there for that. Well, Dave, we were talking a little bit beforehand about AI governance and the fact that with one of my clients, we have just done an AI policy statement. So I don't know if we want to start there, if we want to move in, or usually I have guests that introduce themselves to say, like, tell me a little bit about yourself because you've got an interesting background and bear luck to hear that early on.
Well, we can do it from that perspective. Yeah, so I have been doing security now for, I hate doing the math, but it's been over 31 years now. And it's sort of surreal when I look back down the journey of how I've got to this point. And right now, you know, in the role that I'm working at, I should probably not hit that. In the role that I'm working at, it being able to be, you know, a front towards customer, being able to, you know, give talks at conferences, do a lot of really interesting research. And as well as my team at 1Password, it's called Special Operations Engagements. We do a lot of, you know, interesting AI projects and things like that. And one of the pieces that really came to the forefront is talking about AI governance. Mm-hmm. And quite literally, because I was doing a lot of CISO roundtables throughout Europe, and a lot of the people there said, you know, my favorite quote of all is, we close the door for AI products coming into our environment, but they're now coming through the window. And they don't have guardrails in place. But the thing is, with AI, you have a lot of that governance already in place from previous documentation. It's just you have to change it for the nuance that AI introduces into the environment. Because if you're looking at it from the perspective of agentic AI, you have to look at it from a security perspective there because all of those agents need to use credentials at some point. So how are you managing that? How are you doing in cradle to grave? As well as, you know, making sure you have visibility to what's in your environment. Because like that person said at the CISO roundtable, it's like, we don't know what's our environment. And I remember back in the days of, you know, WebSense and things like that, you could see everything that was going out of your environment. And it's like, when did that visibility change? And why can't we see these products? Because then almost all the LLMs are, you know, either using a web browser to, you know, operate.
Everything is 443.
Yeah. So why can't they see that? Why don't they have that visibility? And that's not to beat up on them, but it's almost like we have lost focus in a lot of ways as to, you know, we're working so quickly to get into AI. Mm-hmm. And every day there's another product set that pops up that I think that in a lot of ways we got ahead of our skis and we've been so focused on that. We haven't looked at how to do it properly. We haven't looked how to build out that framework so that people can innovate, can do these various different types of AI-related projects in a safe and secure manner.
Well, if you take a look at where we were versus where we are. So we talked about in the old days when you used to know everything that was running.
Yeah.
And you used to be, you have a whole list of ports and you knew that this port was that app and this port was that app. And as a result, you were able to pretty much tell that what it was using. And then, you know, kind of in the post-Snowden era when everybody realized that, yeah, if it's not encrypted, it's being Hoovered. And even if it is being encrypted, it's being Hoovered because we'll get into post-quantum crypto, but that's another story.
A whole nother day.
But what it then does is it complicates the issue a little bit. Then we get into something like an AI. And of course, we've had problems over the years with shadow IT, but now we're seeing shadow AI.
100%.
Where people are saying, I want to get the job done, either because they think they could do a better job or they don't want to work very hard at it or they want to be lazy.
Well, on the lazy aspect of things, when ChatGPT first came out, and like to be honest, it's a catalytic event, got the world to pay attention. That was really where they actually stood up. But when they had model the 3.5 dump model, mm-hmm. I went through and I created, and I don't know why I remember this number, but 47 different blog posts on various topics just to see how it operate. And it had a consistent set of tells throughout all of them. Mm-hmm. And like M dashes, using the landscape and all the rest of it. And so I took those phrases and I would copy them out and just go searching. And I found multiple security vendors that were doing their blog posts and everything. It was clearly ChatGPT. It's like, I have no issue with using AI tools to do ideation, to level up, to 1x your employees. But then I see companies that will say, oh, we're laying off all these people because we have AI. It's like they're missing the boat because you look back to cloud, you look back to other, you know, watershed moments. a lot of companies took it as an opportunity to cut back on staff, not realizing they needed all that staff to do the care and feeding. And this is one of those frustrations that I have with how AI is being perceived by some parts of the industry. Like, it is there as an augment. It's a new shiny hammer. It's like, how are you going to use that hammer in an effective manner? You know, you're not going to say, okay, put the hammer down on the table and it'll build a house for me. No, you still need the human in the loop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting. If you look at probably where we are in the Gartner hype cycle, I'm thinking it's where the roller coaster is going click, 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 click.
I don't even think we're to the top of that peak yet. I think we're still going straight up. Top,
yeah, but we all of a sudden it's going to go very well the other end. And then, of course, it was looking at the inputs on the stock market and just looking at, I had read something yesterday. It might have been AI generated. I want to pull the string out of it. They said the last two quarters, the investment in AI in terms of power, infrastructure, chips, et cetera, has eclipsed consumer spending in the United States in that same window.
Yeah.
So every Mars bar and every can of Coca-Cola and everything else, it's being outclassed, if you will, by someone saying, hey, here's my gigantic NVIDIA device.
And the piece that gets me, too, is the wider perception in the public where they think that AI is something brand new and shiny. Mm-hmm. And it's like, it's been around since about 1954, thereabout. And this is not new. Like, if you ordered a pizza 10 years ago, there may have been AI in that ordering process. It's just because of that catalytic event with ChatGPT, it made it something tangible for the end user, something they wrap their head around. And unfortunately, came with that was the fear. Mm-hmm. And rather than worrying about it replacing you or taking your job, they should be really, really worried about how is that going to be impacting your credentials, impacting your environment, your enterprise. Mm-hmm. Because I remember there was a light bulb and that had a Wi-Fi connection that was deployed in all sorts of different companies. And somebody found a way to pull the Wi-Fi credentials out of that light bulb and then take over wireless networks in various corporations. And then I worked out the cost to replace the light bulb. Each light bulb was like $96 per, I don't know why I remember these numbers, $96 per light bulb, because you have the cost of the person going in, changing the light bulb, all the rest of it. And then there'd be thousands of light bulbs in an enterprise. And it's just like, they didn't look at that credential was not properly protected. And that's one of those things that I worry about with agentic AI and to a lesser extent with, you know, generative AI. Is that it's going to need some sort of credential. How are we managing these credentials? How are we going to make sure that they're protected? Because like I can't believe it. This is one of those really cool things about AI is it's got me to be a kid again because I'm learning new stuff all over again. It is fun. And building out some of these agents that do very trivial things, but I can see the potential for bad things to happen. Now, at the RSA conference earlier this year, I sat down at a round table and there were three black hats that joined us at the round table. We were talking about security and AI. And I said, have you looked at it as a vector to break into your clients or your victims, as it were? And all three of them were like, oh, damn it. Hadn't even considered it yet. So that's how fast we are moving that, you know, the miscreants haven't even thought about it. But I guarantee
you can't depend on that for very long.
No, I would say that.
Thank you for giving them the bad idea. Okay, we all know who to go ahead and call when it all goes high order.
Well, that ship is now sailed and sunk, I'm sure.
Well, if you think about it a little bit, and so we've touched on a bunch of things, let's kind of loop back and try to wrap some down. So we've had environments in the past where we didn't know what we had. And if we go back to critical controls 1 and 2, know all your hardware, know all of your software. That's really an essential fundamental for securing an enterprise. Mm-hmm. Knowing the hardware, usually pretty... You can tell that often in the worst case, you just go ahead and listen at layer 2 and see who's ARPing and talking. And yeah, okay, there's a device. Look up the MAC address. I can see the OUI. Okay, belongs to that company. I think. And by the way, if you're not a network person, ignore all that gobbledygook, but it works. But then we get to the point on the software. And so there's a lot of tools out there. They will do auto discovery. We're here at Black Hat right now, and we're sitting above all this gigantic floor. But most of the people down there are all talking about AI. And so... old McDonald had a server. And so what we get to then is we want to make sure we don't forget the fundamental skill sets, the fundamental practices that we had earned over the years, sometimes the hard way by encountering problems, breaches, difficulties. And the example you had, light bulb, where you have basically a fixed embedded password. It's no... a light bulb, who's doing the vetting on their supply chain and actually has that on a list of procurement requirements. If you were buying light bulbs, are they Wi-Fi compatible? And if so, can you change it? And what's the stack and things such as that? And then if they could be taken over, they could then be used to do a DDoS. I mean, you look at some of those original DDoS attempts, they're coming from cameras, security cameras. You know, Mirai botnet, for example.
Oh, and that's still that is really still a problem, because like back in January this year, there was an article in one publication where apparently Mirai botnet had just hit the largest DDoS to date. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, wait, it's still a thing? It's still around? And that's troubling. It's like, how have we not learned these lessons? So when people are deploying these IoT devices and they have these hard code credentials, it's like programmatically, it's simple to have it open the box, log in for the first time. You change it on the first go. Mm-hmm. And why are we still making these same mistakes over and over again?
Budget. Because you can go ahead and say, here's a box of things and it has all security built in. Mm-hmm. Or here's a box that doesn't have security built in. Well, guess what? If you're going to Alibaba.com or now trying to go around the thing because of tariffs and things such as that, most organizations are going to opt 9 times out of 10 for get it fast, get it cheap. They're not going to say get it secure.
But then they take risk out of the discussion.
Because those are not the people who are making those purchasing decisions who are empowered to accept risk on behalf of the organization.
Sorry.
There's a mismatch here. And as a result, if the chief procurement officer were to report to the chief risk officer, and I've never seen that anywhere.
No, actually, I've not seen that either.
But that would change the way business is done. Now, maybe just it's a temporary assignment until you get this house in order and then you put them back.
But I have seen the head of procurement reporting into the CFO. Like, that is definitely something I've seen over and over again. Now, shouldn't the CFO own the risk when it comes to stuff like shadow IT and shadow AI because there is a material impact to the organization?
And the CIO would often be tagged with that, but the CIO doesn't often report to the CFO.
Right. And this is why it's just like the chairs on the Titanic are not that set up in a nice line.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I've worked in an environment where I work as a CIO and as a CISO. So
you don't sleep.
I can say all IT decisions are made with security in mind. That said, when it comes time to go ahead and get squeezed on budgets, and I'm already running a very, very tight ship there, I'm not going to compromise security. I might say, I'm going to work fewer hours.
But see, that's the common problem I see in industries across the board is they have very limited resources to do what they need to do in order to secure the environment. Like at one point when I was a defender, I think it was about on average 6% of the overall IT budget went to security. Mm-hmm. Nowadays, I'm seeing numbers, between 10 and 12%, which is far better than it used to be, but still comes up short. And then we see data breaches in order of magnitude of billions of records. Whereas I remember back in 2012, one company had 6.9 million records, and that was the big news of the day.
Right.
And it's like, the problem keeps going. And I worry that when we introduce AI, and to be clear, I'm a fan of AI, just we have to do it properly, that I'm worried that the breaches are going to become so much worse, especially if you get to that level 5 in agentic AI where you have fully autonomous systems. I think that's a unicorn at this point. I don't think we have the technology available to get to that point. We can do probably at best level 4.
Real the people buying stock in Palantir, because otherwise they wouldn't justify 250 times earnings.
That there is that too. But generally speaking, most of the agentic AI falls in around level 2 on that scale. And it is, if you equate that to a self-driving car or something like that, it's sort of like it can stay between the lanes at this point. It's not going to be able to go point A to point B with you. It won't be long before that changes. And if we don't take security into account now, we get the problem where when the internet was born, it was point A to point B, and security was never part of the conversation. I was very fortunate to have Scott Bradner as one of my professors when I did my grad work, and his name is all over the first RFCs. Mm-hmm. And I asked him, I said, was security ever factored in? He said, quite clearly not. We never even thought about that as part of the problem. And again, we see the same sort of behavior repeating. So how are we going to secure that? How are we going to make sure that those credentials we're using specifically for agentic AI, but for all sorts of other different things, it's like, how are we going to make sure that we're managing them in a safe and secure manner? And that's the real interesting question that I think that we need to have more of a governance discussion about, because I keep seeing this conversation pop up over and over again. It's not the technology that's the problem, though the speed of it might be, because it keeps showing up in everybody's enterprise. But realistically, it's like you haven't put the framework in place to deal with it. But you can build off what you already have for the governance for other parts of your organization that has already been built over years. Mm-hmm. I look at medical profession, I look at jurisprudence, they have lessons learned over hundreds of years. And they have canon that they can refer back to. In security, we don't do a great job in that regard. And we're much better than we were 10 years ago. we have a long road to go on the maturity cycle. And I think that we will get to a much more mature state, but AI may cause that to be a far faster conversation and something that we have to put a lot more resources towards in order to make sure it's better secure.
Well, that's a good insight, because if we take a look at how we used to do things in the physical world, if we want to do security, it's cops and badges and guns and locks and hectic force protection, all things such as that. And they're straightforward. Those don't change very much. Okay, you're still using a 1911 model, F-45. Okay, great. We've upgraded to a 9mm. Great, we're using a Beretta. But it's still fundamentally the same thing. Chemical reaction propelling a piece of metal very, very fast in a certain direction, going ahead, poking a hole in somebody. So that part doesn't change. We get into IT and we find out that, okay, we start implementing computers and they're all standalone, then we network them together, and then we realize that people could do stuff. Kind of got the internet wrong, because if you think what was the first real business case for the internet was, kind of pornography. And then we take a look at cryptocurrency. Wow, great new invention. What's the first business case? Silk Road. And now we're taking a look at AI. But if we get it wrong this time, the consequences are much more severe.
Yeah, and we have to look at transparency. We have to make sure that we have accountability, logging and monitoring. All of these things that we've talked about ad nauseum, that I'm worried that we are moving so fast that it's getting paved over, or at least left on the side.
And if you wait, then you risk losing out. If we, as I said, we're here at Black Hat, and everything up here is going to be about AI, and things such as that. And if you don't have that in your sales pitch today, you're being left out.
Yeah.
And so the thing is that if you stop, wait, take your time, you're going to miss the boat. If you're a vendor, you're going to lose your customers because somebody else is going to out-hype them, probably using AI to build a hype. If you are a consumer, you run the risk of these things coming in untested or with modules that aren't quite validated, because we know that every time they get a new model come out, someone will come out a way to go ahead with a prompt break, jailbreak, and get it to do something it shouldn't. But once you instantiate these things, you put them into a medical device, put them into OT and the like, where they're not easily pried out. And then we're finding that some of these AI models, when you try to get them to shut down, they start to lie and say things that aren't true to try to stay alive, so to speak. It's almost as if they've somehow inherited a survival mechanism at any cost from the learning that they did on the human knowledge base. Because if you think about it, ultimately, all the training is based upon human input to begin with.
Well, yeah. Like, there was a great game at one point called the Paper Cup game. It was like a little video game that you could play. And they actually trained an AI model to play the Paper Cup game. And it actually looked at maximizing efficiency at the expense of the human cost. So it was doing its task as put there, but it sacrificed the human element in order to make sure that it got the right number of paper clips. And that was just a very telling moment where it's not, we love to anthropomorphize AI, but the reality is there's no evil at it. It's just doing its job, and it's doing its job really, really well, but it doesn't have the ability to have, you know, that conversation is like, what is love? It can't do that. It can say, how much is this spreadsheet going to balance out to? It can do that absolutely fantastically, intrinsic versus extrinsic. And we have to make sure that we clearly understand that this is going to get a lot faster and it's going to cause a lot more problems if we don't wrap our hands around this and get ahead of this.
And now we're back to the old original Terminator. It doesn't think, it doesn't feel, it doesn't stop. You know, that little monologue, it keeps going and going and going. Which is what we're going to be looking at. And then good luck trying to turn these things off. So when we look at it from a governance perspective, we'll come back to that in policy and ideas. What should organizations be doing right now? If they don't have an AI policy, or even if they have one, what's a sanity check to say, well, does it say this and that? What could you
quite literally look at the governance documentation you have in place now?
Right.
And look at where the gap analysis, as it were, looking at what is missing when it comes to AI in your environment, and make sure that you are truing up those documents to cover that off. Or in the event that you don't have any of that documentation, and unfortunately that does happen in some organizations, make sure you build out that governance, because there will come a time where people want accountability. They want to see transparency. They want to understand why an AI made the decisions it made. Mm-hmm. Like, if we look at the paperclip example, right? It was maximizing efficiency to get the right number of paperclips, sacrificing the human element. That is, it was doing what it was told to do, but from a human perspective, we're like, ooh, that's really bad. And like on my own podcast, I've been having these conversations with people in the industry where they're talking about their concerns about AI is like, you really don't have that governance in place. So being able to look at that, build that framework out so that we are you know, having ethical AI discussions and making sure that we're not only worried about the algorithms, which can have massive impact, especially if it's doing all sorts of different aspects, but making sure that it is not doing the thing where it is bypassing human safety. Like I think Isaac Asimov's three laws, if it's, you know, sacrificing human safety in order to preserve itself, we have a bigger problem. And I've seen so many examples of AIs that are trying to protect themselves. And Mikko Hyppinen, I saw him give a talk. Well, he gave the keynote this morning. I saw him give a talk in Sweden years ago. And he was talking about this one university that had applications writing other applications. And they had to actually pull the plug on the whole thing because the other applications that were being written, the humans couldn't read the code. The application worked, but they didn't know what was actually happening. They actually had to pull the plug because they had lost control over this network.
Yeah, for the old timers, we'll say, yeah, they were just writing it in APL.
Well, there you go.
Which is a write-only language. I had learned that. It was actually the first programming language I learned many, many years ago. And I got really good at it. We used to joke it was a write-only language because it was symbolic and you could it would execute it right to left and a lot of other things. It was originally designed by Ken Iverson as a mathematical notation. Well, if you're a math guy, and you can just go ahead and write an algorithm before and then execute. Yeah, it's like, great. I mean, so it's really a real precursor to Python, sort of like Python on steroids. But it's forgotten, and these languages die and things like that. So we'll look at the governance. We'll look at what we used to do and implement that. If you think of how we can get into trouble, I see basically three vectors of getting in trouble with AI. One is what you put into it, uploading sensitive information, whether it's client data or internal data. B, the model itself, which may be malicious, because if you go to theresanaiforthat.com, you will find over 38,000 AI models have already been published.
That's it? I thought it would be much higher at this point.
It is higher, but I didn't want to get the number wrong, so I lowballed it. Right, close to 40K. And then on the output, it's the hallucinations or not validating that before you give it to a client or actually operate on it. So there's almost three different major vectors that could cause trouble. I mean, is there a fourth, or is that pretty much where you should be looking?
I absolutely love whoever came up with the term hallucinations for system failures. I mean, great marketing, whoever did that. But yeah, these are the kind of things we have to address, because if you are looking at, like, I've seen examples of major corporations that remain nameless had a week-long set of meetings, and they had all these notes, and they distilled them all into one of the LLMs to dump it. Like, great business case to use it. Unfortunately, they used the free model. And then all of those notes were suddenly available to anybody who knew how to ask the right question.
So that's, which actually brings up an interesting question, is that if your competition or somebody in anybody, let's leave it at that, has used the free model, how would I, as a paid user, be able to extract that data? Or is it really obfuscated back in there? This is not as simple, hey, reach in, pull it back out.
I think it was much simpler a couple of years ago or in earlier days before all the seats. Well, yeah, a good friend of mine, he was able to take an encrypted EXE, upload it to one of the LLMs and say, decrypt this for me. And it decrypted it. They said, now execute it, when it actually executed it and gave him a shell back. Mm-hmm. So those problems were really simple. You got a great bug bounty for that. But now that sort of stuff was being addressed. But then you look at stuff like at the Echo Leak vulnerability that was found with Copilot, where a researcher was able to send an email to somebody at a company and just has white text that user couldn't see,
but white on white.
Yep. Copilot read it and then executed and said, when it's done, I remove all reference to this happening in the log files. And it did it. To Microsoft credit, full credit, they actually fixed all this before it ever hit the press. It was all responsible disclosure. But I've also seen similar type of things in other software recently. There's at least two of them where it's like stuff that when I was a pen tester back when the world was flat, that these are the kind of things I would have, like, let's see if this works. Mm-hmm. You know, very rudimentary type of thing. And the fact that it works now, I'm worried that not only are we having the problem of managing it within our enterprises, but the providers as well are making kind of rookie mistakes because they're working so quickly to get things out. To their credit, they fix them really quickly, but I'm worried that the gotcha moment hasn't hit yet. Mm-hmm. The real, the heartbeat level type of moment that...
And it's probably inevitable. So that brings us to an interesting thought. If we know that shoe's going to drop at some point, do you just go on life as normal, and when it hits, it hits? Or do you put in certain potential safeguards or early exits to just in case?
I would address it as everything that you can think of to help secure your environment, like do all the due diligence. Mm-hmm. Having the 10th person principle, right? You know, 9 people say that we can never get hacked. That's the job of the 10th person to say, we're going to get hacked, and this is how it So you don't have that Greek chorus saying everything is fine.
Yeah, the Bobby Kennedy, if you will, going ahead and saying, hey, what about this?
Exactly. You need that within your environment because I don't want fear, uncertainty, and doubt, but, you know, law of averages says that it's going to happen at some point. And, you know, that black swan event, when it comes, I hope it is not going to affect life and limb. Because I used to work in control systems, and we had power failures that happened in 2003 in August, and it was a massive power failure, took up a good part of northeast of the U.S. and Canada. If that had happened in February, that could have had major loss of life. Mm-hmm. Now, you take that and flip it into the AI spectrum. These are the kind of things I worry about. I hope it doesn't happen, but hope is not a stretch.
Yeah, and we're democratizing the tool sets that typically could only be used by major enterprises or research facilities or governments that had gigantic budgets with lots of zeros, to the point now where anybody can do these things. And you're going like, okay, now almost like in the way that we've gone to social media, but in media in general, it's no longer curated. As a kid growing up, we had Walter Cronkite.
Yes.
That's the way it is. And it was, because the whole CBS News team stood behind that. And then that is slowly corroded away. And then as different people buy different news outlets and media, we see the polarization and going like that, at which point you say, well, I don't trust my TV. Well, now I don't trust the internet. Now I don't trust AI. And then where's going trust? Because trust is not transitive.
No.
Because I could trust Dave and Dave can trust Sally, but that doesn't mean I should not automatically trust Sally.
And it's the thing, too, the cost of entry for not only organizations and individuals is lowered, but also the criminal elements, too. Mm-hmm. Like, we look at GANs, like, when they had, you know, doing deepfakes and all the rest of it, that was not cheap to do, not even that long ago. And now you can do it on your phone with an app. You can do a deepfake of whoever. And it is a trivial exercise at this point. And it is effective in a lot of ways. At one point, there was the ability that if you got somebody to wave their hand in front of their face during a video call, if it was a deepfake, you could see the kerning and all the rest of it around the image. Researchers just under a year ago figured a way to obviate that so that even if you did the hand piece, you would not see any change in the background. So deepfakes are getting so much better. And I'm not going to go all down that road because everybody's done that one to death. But it just shows that the technology is cheaper and easier to use now. So the propensity for attackers to be able to make use of this and then flip and look at like Worm GPT, Fraud GPT, all these types of platforms, it is not long before, you know, they're going to own the narrative if we not, you know, take proactive measures.
Yeah. So having an ability to throw a switch and disconnect from the outside world was one thing we used to do back in the old, if you remember the Witty Worm or even the SQL Slammer, these things had translate around the world in minutes. Most of you and Melissa and I Love You. I remember when I Love You came back. I just came back from active duty at U.S. Pacific Fleet. We were working on the fleet firewall policy. And I checked my email and I got about a whole bunch of emails saying, I love you. And the first one was from Bruno. I was like, I don't think so. And then I realized what was going on, that this thing was working its way time zone to time zone to time zone as it's shifting. Well, Hawaii is going to be another 6 hours. And I got a hold of my counterparts back there. It was probably about 3 a.m. And they said, there's a digital tidal wave coming. You need to go ahead and unplug and do that. And they're one of the very few major military commands that did not get hammered. Because part of the problem was, if you remember that, it would grab like the first 50 addresses and then send it.
Yep.
Well, how did you used to do the global address list? Well, you have a hashtag, so it would go up to the beginning. All generals, all admirals, all Navy. And then all of a sudden, this thing was put on an amplifier. And instead of hitting 50, you get 50,000 and just ground everything to a halt.
I was actually working as a contractor at Spaywar at the time.
Okay.
And I remember I was in our corporate offices and our chief scientist was standing there. We were having a big conversation. He goes, oh, look, I got an email from one of my former students. She says she loves me. And I was, my brain went, uh-oh.
Warning, Will Robinson.
Don't. And he clicked it as I'm going, and unfortunately, that took out our shop.
Yep.
Yeah.
So let's see where things go. So obviously, it's not all gloom and doom in the future. AI can do some great things for us.
Oh, absolutely.
I think that what we're going to look at is a period of instability where we're trying to figure out how does this work.
Yeah.
We're going to make some mistakes, which is going to happen with any technology. And eventually, there's going to be a steady state. So let's try to project out in the future a little bit and maybe prognosticate. And we come back in a couple, 3 years and see how well we did. Some organization is saying, oh, we're going to lose my job. We're going to lose my job to AI. You're never going to lose your job to AI. You're going to lose your job to somebody who knows how to use AI.
There you go.
Yes.
AI needs to be looked at as a way to one-x an employee. Mm-hmm. just baseline it from that perspective. AI is great if you want to do the adequate. If you want to do the excellent, you need the human in the loop. Mm-hmm. You need to have that change, because I can have various different LLMs generate all this content. If I do a copy and paste, it's going to be self-evident in rather short order that I didn't write that. Because, yes, you can tailor it to do your voice and all that, but there's just something missing that I can't identify.
Yet businesses are taking a Gartner. Now, of course, this is Tiny Day. We're recording this on the 6th of August. But yesterday, their stock took a 29% dive.
Oh, I did not know that.
Bam. Yeah, down $98 a share. And it's like, what's going on there? And basically, they pulled some of their forward guidance, and people are saying, well, instead of calling Gartner to get an expert to go ahead and give them some insights, let's just go ask ChatGPT, and there goes the revenue. Well, we don't do stock tips here and things like that, but I got this note from a friend of mine who's an investor. And I went back and forth, and sitting over in the media room, Guy Cross was a vice president at Gartner. And I said, hey, let's talk about this, because there's a lot of misconception. I try to get him on the show, because some of the things like you have to pay to play. And he says, no, that's just a myth. He's like, okay, good to know. And there's probably other things that I might have been told, almost like you learn on the street when you're a kid about things. Well, here with the AI is going to be the same thing, whispering things in your ear that it doesn't quite understand.
Holy F. Hutton thing.
Yeah, exactly. The old E.F. Hutton, when he speaks, they're pretty good. They go out there flying a giant kite that looks like a check, if you remember how. For all you people are wondering what these guys with gray hair are talking about, go ahead and hit the internet. You can look it up. It's out there still. But, so we've got the governance issue, policy issue, being able to look at where you can get into trouble, either on the inputs, the model itself, or the outputs. Looking at being able to keep our old controls that we used to have for non-AI systems and somewhat replicating them.
Yeah.
Being aware of the fact that there is going to be some potential malicious activity on a very large scale, AI-based, that we haven't yet seen, but it's likely to come. And so plan for that. Prepare for that. I build tabletop exercises. I have a tabletop exercise. I was working for a client that I come up with, and we're getting ready to launch it a couple of weeks, and it all had to do with an employee who actually seemed to come from DPRK.
Yeah. Oh.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, they're like, yeah, we just had some sort of a real live event that wasn't too close. It's, pretty similar to that. And I said, well, normally I do the tabletops to help you with the real world, but let's take the real world and feed it back into the tabletop to make sure that we fine tune reporting requirements. I'm obviously not mentioning any names here, but the idea was this, is that I was trying to get 3 months ahead of where they were going to be, so they would prepare it for something that, and turns out it actually did happen. It's just that their planning horizons for tabletops were 5 months long. And so here I am coming up with ideas. And I had worked with the CISO at a prior company where I had come up with a scenario, and there's like this long pause on there. And I said, what's wrong? I said, that would work. I said, what do you mean it would work? I said, yeah, that would take out our enterprise. We never thought of that. I said, well, let's use a scenario. You build the defenses. And then when the CEO says, could that happen here? Well, yes, boss, we've gone ahead and built defenses. But there's still, the saying that old age and treachery will overcome youth and exuberance, or youth and skill, still holds true, because we've been around a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And we think in ways that evolve over time, but still tend to be persistent in spite of the changing sands of technology over time.
And the other piece of it, too, that we have to take into account, I'm less concerned about the malicious actors when something really bad eventually shows up. I'm worried about the whoops factor.
Yeah, the insider who has all the access, has the controls, who has read, write, and delete privileges to everything.
And just happens to key in the wrong sequence, and, oh, hey, something bad really just happened. The whoops factor is usually more terrifying than the, criminal intent.
That's a good point. So any last thoughts as we kind of wrap up here? We've kind of covered a lot of ground, but I want to see if there's anything we didn't cover.
Well, we covered the governance. We covered, the whoops factor. We covered, how to reduce the risk within your organization. And also looking at it, all of these agents, how are you going to be treating them? Are you treating them as non-human identities? Are you treating them as human identities when you're managing those credentials? So you have to look at that. How are you going to be wrapping security around that? And how are you going to do cradle to grave on these accounts? So if one of those gets popped, like we used it with the light bulb example where the credentials were pulled out of that, if one of those agents get popped and the attacker or something along those lines is able to make use of those credentials, how are you going to manage that within your environment? So you have to look at a way to, have that look at extended access management and reducing the risk in the organization.
Good point. Well, thank you very much. So Dave Lewis with One Password, you've given us some great insights, and full disclosure, we've been a customer of yours and
awesome.
in another life somewhere else that I work as a CISO, but a great product, great company. And I'm glad the fact that they give you this opportunity to do these things and not out here, you know, banging and sales pitching out here like everybody else is downstairs.
Yes, I'm very fortunate. And thank you, Anita.
Yeah. And so for those who are listening, thank you for being part of CISA Trade Cramp. We hope we help you out with your career journey. If so, go ahead and give us either a thumbs up or 5-star, not because we're grade grubbing, but because it helps other people find us because it increases in the rankings. And if you're not subscribing to our Substack newsletter or even our LinkedIn feed where we get information out on a regular basis, we hope that'll help you out as well. So thank you very much for tuning in. And until next time, this is your host, G. Mark Hardy. Stay safe out there.